You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the EU Startups Podcast. I'm your host, David Sandin Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I had the pleasure of chatting with Hanno Renner. He's the CEO and co-founder of Personio, an HR tech platform out of Munich. Personio was founded in 2015 with really a small group of co-founders and has now, well, since 2021, raised $500 million in funding and supports thousands of SMEs across Europe. And it was really quite a delightful conversation. Hanno covered really all sides of his company, from the in-depth background, what it offers, and the nonprofit organizations that it supports. He even touched on the very timely topic of European sovereignty, European startups, and how it compares with USA startups and really the whole political climate right now, especially in light of President von der Leyen's comments on EU Inc. So I hope you're looking forward to that. And for all listeners and people watching, whether on YouTube or on the website, we'd like to offer a special 30% discount to the EU Startup Summit in Malta from May 7th to 8th. Now, this is 30% off, and all you have to do is type podcast30 in the discount code. That's podcast in all capital letters, 30. So I hope all of you take advantage of that. We'll have more information in the description below. Now, before we get into the interview, a quick message from our sponsor, Vanta.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vanta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Welcome, Hanno, to the EU Startups Podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, David. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, of course. It's our pleasure. So I was hoping before we get into the questions that we've got prepared for today, that you could give us just a quick background as much as yourself to the Personio company.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm Hanno, co-founder and CEO at Personio. I started the company around 10 years, pretty much exactly 10 years ago, and been building an HR and payroll platform for European SMEs since. So we are serving companies between 50 and 5,000 employees across all things HR, from, of course, payroll, their performance management, their whole HR management processes, and really just helping customers operate a lot more efficiently. And in recent years, transformed to the intelligent HR platform, where with the power of AI, we're helping automate HR processes in an even more efficient way.
Great. Yes. Well, we've had our eye on you for many years now. I went back in the database to see what kind of coverage we've had, and we've been there basically since the beginning, and it's been just such an amazing journey to watch even now how you've grown. And I guess my first question is related to that, because we've seen you from a go from a 35 million to 190 million raise. So there's these huge kind of growth phases. Which one would you say was actually the hardest, even though perhaps it didn't look like that from the outside, considering just how well you've grown?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, of course, the early phases are incredibly hard. No one knows you. Like, if you want to hire someone, it's really difficult. If you need to convince people to give you money for fundraise. Customers in particular, you don't have a brand. You can't say, oh, these are the 15,000 customers we're serving. Would you want to be one of them? But you have to convince them to be one of the first ones. So a lot of these things are hard in the early days per definition. However, I think one thing that maybe is a little bit overlooked is the reality versus expectations. And in the early days, no one has any expectations towards you. So it's really hard, really easy to surpass these expectations, whether it's customers or investors or the press, and like easy in a sense that it's just like there is no expectation. So you hit them. But then as you kind of you grow and then you hit milestones and you become a unicorn, you do all these things. And then both customers are no longer considering you a small startup that maybe sometimes it's outages or whatever, but they think, hey, you're a grown-up business. You raised millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. So I need to be able to rely on you, and rightfully so, they should. So that expectation goes up. Mm. Your investors, after you having hit and overachieved your growth plans for many years and raised more money, they at some point think, oh yeah, there's just a rocket ship and they'll never stop. So all of a sudden, hitting your plans is only like, oh yeah, that's how we expect it from Personio because they've always done well. Equally also the public, when you like hear all these press reports and podcasts and whatever, and then everyone's like, oh yeah, that's just like, it always goes well for them. The reality is, of course, that's never the case, and never no company in the world always just goes like that. So you always have bumps. But I think the challenging part of being a successful large company is then continue to deliver against those expectations, and almost that like hitting what you said you do is almost just good enough rather than really. And I think that puts some pressure on you as a founder and executive team to continue to deliver on those. So I think the more recent years, and then of course you have some headwinds on the economy, and you have some headwinds on the capital markets changing and so on. So I think navigating these changing expectations is actually probably an interesting phase to be in.
Sure. Well, I think it's so important to us here at EU Startups and this podcast specifically to highlight that kind of human angle. You know, as you're saying, it's so easy to just see the success of a company and expect that it's always been like that and it will always be like that. So I think it is a very important detail you're highlighting there. And I've read, and I think this is such a great story and such great color, that at one point, right at the beginning, there was a moment when you only had a couple hundred euros in the company bank account right before the funding came in. What was that like? How close and kind of tight did everything feel in that moment? And are there decisions perhaps that you made during that period that were kind of informed by that pressure that maybe you wouldn't have made now?
Yeah. So I think a couple of thoughts. So yeah, I remember, I think I talked to you guys back then about a screenshot I took from the bank account at that point in time. And it was mainly because I had never seen a bank account with millions of euros on there. And so I was excited to like go from like this bank account that I've been navigating, which looked more like my personal bank account because there's never much money in. And then all of a sudden see it jump. So that's why I took this screenshot. But realistically, the first little bit over a year, we were completely bootstrapped. So our bank account looked like that every month, and which is like fluctuate just a little bit above zero, and that of course was normal, and it's the way of an early stage startup. And then there were months where at the end of the month you realize you didn't have enough money to pay the founder salaries, so there were no founder salaries that month. And of course that's not how you can scale a company to the size where we are today, and eventually you need to operate differently. And over the last years our cash balance hardly ever dropped below 100 or 50 million. And that's as it should be, because we need the stability. Mm-hmm. Our customers need to rely on us being a stable business. And now we're about to, this 2026 will be the first year we'll be profitable. So we will probably never dip into those low numbers. And that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. That said, I think to your point, the early days where you don't have a lot of money, and even not just a seed round, but also Series A and so on, I actually think it's really healthy to have them. And there's this famous saying, scarcity breeds clarity. And I think it is really true. And if I do think the amount of capital influx happening now again for some AI startups, but certainly in 21, 22, when capital was literally free because interest rates were zero, was not good for building great businesses. So there were a lot of decisions many companies took that weren't really the best for the company and the customer. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important as a founder to also create that scarcity even if you have a lot of money. And that's what we're now doing this year. Of course, we have enough capital in the bank account so we could keep burning and then not give us this restraint, but by saying, no, we want to be profitable, that gives you a certain amount of money that you generate, and that's what you can reinvest. And that makes you much more resourceful and much smarter in which products you want to invest and where you want to go deep. And I think, so I do think scarcity is important. I do think having too much money is not good for any business. And if you do, then at least make sure you put your own scarcity guardrails on.
Okay. Well, this topic you're touching on scaling, I think gives to many natural questions. But I think one that interests me the most and kind of returning to this human side of things is, as I understand it, there is four co-founders, yourself included. You all met in university at CDTM in Munich. And I'm curious as to how those roles have evolved. Because if you're talking about just some kind of small little startup, well, four people in it cover all roles. And eventually, but as you grow to the size of Personio is now, how has that changed? How have you all kind of adapted to dividing the different sections of the company? Has that been natural? Has it been a little bit rocky?
Yeah. So first of all, I think you touched on an important point. It's not about giving yourself fancy titles, but it's about defining responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So who is doing what? And that's the same in a four-person company as it is in a 1,500-person company. Of course, the latter is a bit more complex. But in a four-person company already, you might have fancy titles like one is the CEO and one is the CTO and whatever. But ultimately, it's about, okay, who is responsible for customer service? Who is responsible if the customer has an issue? Who reacts first when there's downtime? And so being very clear on these responsibilities early on is important. And we've solved that also then as we grow a little bit by kind of defining very clear mission-based teams. So not this is your department, but this is the mission you are carrying. And maybe you carry the founders multiple missions, but this is what you're end-to-end responsible. And then also that helps you allocate resources and allocate team like responsibilities going forward. If this is the mission you have, you carry, then how should you be able to be set up and what functions should you have to support that mission? And I think that's also gone on into the future. What worked for us early on pretty well was the division of roles. I didn't want to be the CEO because CEO is particularly cool to be, but it was clearly aligning with things I'm naturally good at and things that I enjoy doing. And Roman as CPO or Joan as a CEO had their own strength and their own things they were passionate about. And so that was fairly natural, and in the division of at least responsibilities and ultimately what that means for title. Yeah, you typically give the person the CEO title that ends up talking to investors and early on selling to customers and so on. And the people that are much deeper in the product or closer to customers have different titles. But it doesn't really matter. I think that's the part that really is important. And then also being honest over time as things scale, where are areas and responsibilities that you can't cover within the founder team well enough, and where should you hire externally? And that's also an important conversation to have and to be low ego. And I think that's the biggest part, probably the biggest quality we had in our founder team of not having egos, not trying to do things for ourselves, but we all are interested in the best for the company and thereby figuring out what's the right thing. And then when later on some of my co-founders stepped down, it was also in a very mutual conversation about this is no longer what they enjoy doing. There's no longer what the company needs. So let's maybe find someone else that's better in that. And that's also totally fine.
Sure, sure. Well, speaking of your co-founder, we did do an interview with Roman in 2022. And whoever wants to read that can, but there's, there's great bits where he talks about the future of Personio and where he wants it to be in a couple of years. And I think just from a quick scan, it seems like you've met most of those goals already. But with that in mind, I guess I want to bring it to kind of a sector analysis and question, because as you know, we cover all kinds of startups here. And I had a quick look at the HR tech coverage that we did just in 2025 last year. And I saw that roughly we had between 100 and 150 million euros in funding flowing throughout the just the entire ecosystem. Germany, which is your home market, I think took in about 15 or 20 million, which is a good amount. Where do you see Personio's role in this ecosystem? You know, especially with mounting competition as more and more get funding, there's different tools. Although I do have to say that when it comes to full suite offerings like Personio still kind of stands alone in that space. There's plenty of tools, and many of them, when we talk to them about their funding, mention Personio as our tool integrates so well with Personio. So it seems like you've actually just transcended beyond the competition to just kind of be something that they want to engage with.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I think it does hit and align very well with our vision. So we want to be the system of record first and foremost, a single source of truth for all the people data. We started really with the least sexiest part, at least back in the days, and like the record of the employee. Like when you think about where customers still partially today had spreadsheets with all the names and what they earn and their salaries and their information and what's their emergency contact. And really all that data is sort of the nucleus of Personio. And owning that nucleus and being in the system of record, one, allows us to then solve the second most important problem that most customers have, which is payroll, mm-hmm. Which you need that data for. So bringing those two together, HR and payroll at the core, is really what we're offering for all of our customers. And then around that, and you touched on our suite offering, of course, there's many things that benefit from having them in close by. So think about performance development, of course, basis on that data, and then doing that well inside Personio allows you to have the performance data. You can then go into compensation management, do your salary increases, which then flows into payroll. So of course, there's a lot of connection points. And at the same time, being that system of record and sitting at the center, also allows us to integrate with many other players. And we have over 200 partners that we integrate with on our marketplace. So that is in that position, we're very happy to partner with people. And a lot of these people coming in and solving problems that we don't want to solve or never want to solve, we're very happy to partner with. And even some people that solve something that we do solve already in a very specific way for a specific industry, we're also very happy to partner because we ultimately want the customer to have the best solution. And many enjoy the all-in-one. And some say, yeah, that we love these three products from you, but we'd like to have these two others from someone else. And that's also great as long as we're the system of record and have that core data. And in the field of AI, that also supports, in context of our intelligent HR platform, a lot of these things as well. By us having that core data and owning a lot of the specific workflows, we of course lend ourselves very well to then go the next step for customers. And if you cover a certain part of the workflow, you can expand that with agents and AI to help customers do work that currently is already happening, but is connected to that workflow, but happens outside of tools, and bring that into the software. So yeah, a lot of things for us to be building, both in terms of partnering with other players on multiple dimensions in the market, but also for us to really innovate ourselves and continue to deepen the platform for European companies and make sure we are sort of the go-to HR and payroll platform, and then give them the choice on the surrounding areas.
Mm. Well, while we're on this topic of kind of European companies and the way everything's going, I think we'd be remiss not to talk about certain political kind of angles that are developing right now in Europe. As you know, here at EU Startups, we've always been very interested in supporting kind of an EU-based company and structure. Now there's von der Leyen's recent comments with EU Inc. That's kind of, and they've been around for a while. That's not to say that this is something new, but the idea of the 28th regime is, it seems to be really picking up speed. Where does Personio land on that, and you yourself individually?
Yeah, it's it's something I'm incredibly passionate about. I often say I'm not very patriotic about being German, but I am very patriotic about being European. And I do really love the European concept and the way it's evolved. I love this continent. And that's why we are also very focused on serving European companies from Europe to scale globally. We have customers using the product all around the world, but they're mostly headquartered in Europe. And And the reason I care so much about or what we can do, of course, is besides the efforts we're doing ourselves by proving that large-scale technology companies can exist in Europe by helping European SMEs, which are the backbone of the European economy, support them, but also politically trying to pave the way for more of that to happen and enable more of that. And so the initiative EUing from Andreas Klinger has been something we've been supporting for years already since its launch and been very passionate about. Same with also the stock option programs, not optional, that Index and a few others have initiated. I think those are really important building blocks. And I've wrote a blog post or a Slack LinkedIn post about that yesterday, that the recent developments with what's coming out of the US and so on with Greenland, I think as much as they bother me personally, they also, I think, are a massive opportunity for us to truly work towards European independence, the way von der Leyen has also talked about, and to build on that. And EU Inc. is one of these very fundamental areas to show that if you build a company like Personio that is based in five European countries, that you can actually also build that in as one country, and you don't have to worry about having an entity in Spain that's taxed differently and has different rules than the entity in Germany and so on. So that's something which I'm a big fan of, and there's many more of these. And if we combine sort of the talent we have here in Europe and the entrepreneurial ambitions with some of these political and policy changes, then I think we'll be in really fantastic position to strengthen European technology, and you guys will have a lot to write about.
Yes. No, we already do. We already do, really. Our coverage, I mean, it's growing by the day, and that question is very relevant. The question of, as a successful European company, do you decide to make the jump over? Do you want to? Do you stay? And I think it's something that any successful company kind of has to tackle in a way, because we posted about EU Inc. as well, and maybe people don't believe it, but we read a lot of those comments, and there's such a clear division between people saying, okay, well, this is just more bureaucracy. This isn't really going to help. If you want to grow, go to the US. But then at the same time, there's just as many people saying what you're saying, that this is an important development for Europe, and it's really the way forward. And I think Personio really encapsulates that in a big way. You're a large company, and you have offices all across Europe, and you've established yourself all throughout and haven't really given up that kind of Europeanness, I guess, if we can call it, and that a bit of patriotism, as you say.
Absolutely. And I really don't think, I think some people mistake the fact that there is so many tech companies in the US with, oh, it's much easier there to found. It's a numbers game. Plenty of founders that fail in the US along the way, as they should be, and that's completely normal, as they should be over here as well. But if you look not even beyond Personio, if you look at companies like Spotify, Adyen, Revolut, it's absolutely possible to build globally leading companies out of Europe. And we've done that in other sectors in the past. There's no reason we can do it in tech as well. We have the fantastic talent. A lot of the people in Silicon Valley are Europeans, and there's no reason they can build fantastic companies over here as well. And there's by now enough examples. And I think the one next to regulation and capital, which I think are both being solved, the one puzzle piece that is still partially a disadvantage is you have a lot of fantastic talent, but not as many been there, done that, having scaled through a scale-up journey five times type mm-hmm. talent. But that is changing now. You have now people that you can hire from that have been on Spotify from 100 millions to billions of revenue. You have from us a lot of people that are team leads in sales now become heads of sales in smaller startups and so on. So I think that flywheel is now really starting to happen, and that's really, really exciting to see. And in the meantime, we've recruited and relocated a bunch of executives from the US as well. And Donald Trump is making that a lot easier because
the bleed of experts from the US to Europe. Yes. Something that I've noticed really through these interviews that I've been doing through different events I've been able to attend, that there's one element that I think doesn't get discussed a lot, that it's this assumption that it's the same market, and that just if you can somehow land in San Francisco, all of a sudden that leads to success. Whereas there's plenty of data, and there was some at, the How To Web Summit. I saw a talk about a man who put figures who said, well, it was a large majority of companies fail when they make that jump over to the US. And that's kind of a narrative that isn't at all, or data that isn't really talked about in this kind of narrative that, oh, we have to go to the US and, oh, it's going to be so successful for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was thinking that a bit of color that I really like from your personal story, and it's actually something we share, was your time as a yacht skipper. I find this interesting because I wasn't a yacht skipper. I'm going to say that. I worked on a sailboat. It was a small sailboat that did these kind of sunset tours around the Santa Monica in LA. And I did that for a couple summers. And that kind of got me thinking a little bit about what you could take from that and what you have taken from that experience. Is there some kind of like just a sailing lesson that kind of still shapes the way you lead today?
It's a good question. I do think there's probably two things that come to mind. The first one is one of servant leadership. So if you think about the being a skipper, as I was doing next to my university in summers in the Mediterranean, in winters Caribbean, other places, ultimately the people that pay you and that are your customers are on vacation. Like they're paying you to move you around some islands and of course bring them safe somewhere. But ultimately they don't want to be bossed around. But at the same time, as a skipper of a boat, you're the captain, you're the person responsible. So you're also in difficult situation. And sometimes you just have to tell them, no, you can't swim now. You can't do this because this is not safe. Or I need you to do X, Y, Z now, I think. And the way to do that is a lesson in servant leadership to ensure that they, on the one hand, are feeling like they're in control, it's their vacation, they tell what's happening, what they want to do, because they're also paying for it, while at the same time still subtly controlling what's actually happening and how you're making sure that the things that need to happen are safe and so on. So mm-hmm. I think that's one. And then I think the other one is also when you're sailing, that of course, most of the times, if you're sailing around the islands, not a lot happens. But I've been in situations where storms hit. We've sailed across the Atlantic with some friends, and there is some real serious situations happening where maybe one of your sails rip, and it's all of a sudden in the middle of a storm, and there's a huge drama. Or one set of situation in Greece in the middle of a storm where one of our ropes from a sail got wrapped around the prop of the boat in the bottom, and yeah. And in these situations, especially because you're the only, like, if you're a skipper, like, there's no one else you can say, oh, how we solve this, but you have to make a decision and you have to project calm in that situation. And in this case, mm-hmm. having to dive down with a knife and cut things loose below the boat while it's bouncing at 3 meters a wave. And I think just that, you know, regulating yourself, regulating your nervous system, staying calm and projecting that calmness to the team or to the crew in that case is, I think, something that in a scale-up environment certainly also holds true and is something that you have to operate with as well.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I really do like that color, the kind of captain on the sea kind of thing, captain of industry. You know, it lends itself very easily, I think, to images and ideas that already exist in entrepreneurship. And this is my last question, because I'm sure you're a busy man, but I want to end, I think, on the social responsibility and advocation that Personio does. Now, I understand the Personio Foundation, from the last numbers I was able to find, represents around $85 million in equity. And this is from 1% of Personio's profits. So I wanted to ask you about where did that come from, that idea to do that? And just where does business responsibility and social responsibility, where do they meet?
Yeah. So the idea for the Personio Foundation came up very early. Even like as we started the company, we said, hey, ultimately, if this company is going to be successful, we want to have an impact, of course, on our customers. We want to build a great company for our employees. But we also believe we have a responsibility for the society at large and then trying to give back something. So we put a clause of a 1% of the company would kind of be donated into a charitable foundation early on or before starting. And then every financing round we did, this 1% was non-dilutive, so every investor had to contribute to it as well. So it was always a bit of a discussion. We were always a bit surprised seeing that in our documentation, but it was a clear, like, yeah, if you want to be part of Personio, you have to contribute to that as well. And at a point in time, then around 4 years ago, when we finally established the Personio Foundation and transferred that 1%, we also then, both as founders, donated a substantial amount of money in there, but also sort of bullied all the investors into contributing as well. So to ensure that the foundation can already be active even ahead of an IPO. And since then, we've been giving grants of $3.5 million to nonprofit organizations. We've set up a non-monetary support structure which we talk about the impact accelerator, where we help NGOs around the world with their HR practices, both with things like People Partner for Good, where we match them with some of our senior people leaders internally and out of our customers, but also have an online accelerator where they can learn for free about best practices in HR. So we really try to take our learnings from the business, bring them to that sector. And to your question, I'm very passionate about it. That's why I talk about it, but I'm actually not behind all of that. The brain behind that is Anna, our head of foundation. She runs that foundation in a really powerful way with a team herself. It's a separate entity, so it has its own balance sheet, its own structure, and it's fully charitable. I'm merely a board member. But that being said, I think while the Personio Foundation is a really important part of our societal contributions, I also don't think the sort of there's on the business side, it's only business, and then you can generate profits and put that into foundation, and that does good. I also think as a business, you can do things. We have, for example, a 50% discount for all NGOs. We have a ton of nonprofits using our product, which we support with at reduced rates. We have impact days, which our employees can take to go get engaged in whatever project they are passionate about. And so I think, and of course, speaking up, as I did on LinkedIn last night on the European issue, I think it's also using your voice, using your platform, using your employees as a voice for topics that are important in society, I think is also an important part. And I strongly believe in that that responsibility that business leaders carry and businesses as well.
Mm. Well, I'm sure the nonprofit organizations are willing to forgive you bullying the investors and everybody on their behalf, because it seems like it's turned out well. So thank you very much, Anno, for really a great conversation and for joining us here on the U Startups podcast.
No problem. Thank you, David, for having me.
Talk soon. Bye.
Ciao.